Hello and welcome back to the Urology Care Podcast. I have a familiar guest to the podcast with me right now. I'm going to let him introduce himself.
Yes, Casey, delightful to join you again. This is Arthur Burnett. I am professor of urology here at the Johns Hopkins Medical Institutions.
And I understand you were also co-chair of the panel that developed this new clinical practice guideline on erectile dysfunction. Is that correct?
That is correct.
If you don't mind just giving us a brief background on what a guideline is and how it's used in clinical practice.
Certainly. Well, a guideline is a tool that clinical practitioners can use, but also it's potentially available for the community and patients to view that provides a general information in a basic way about management of a particular topic. Here, erectile dysfunction. And so for practitioners and patients, let's say, this is something that can be accessed to help guide the basic diagnosis and treatment of erectile dysfunction.
First of all, what is erectile dysfunction? What do patients need to know about it?
Well, erectile dysfunction is a condition whereby a man has impairment of his ability to achieve an erection, a penile erection that's used, obviously, for sexual activity. And this is a condition that is actually fairly common, associated with various other medical conditions, and certainly is very important with regard to a person's sense of well-being and quality of life, as well as their overall medical health.
What kind of things can cause erectile dysfunction for a patient?
Well, erectile dysfunction is associated with common medical conditions that include cardiovascular disease, includes various kinds of neurological conditions, diabetes, which is very common, also certain lifestyle factors from history of cigarette smoking, being overweight. These sorts of things are associated as well.
What is this new guideline that you were instrumental in helping develop mean for patients? What's changed, if anything?
Well, I think what's important about this is a greater appreciation that this is a true condition, that it is associated with various other health conditions and diseases, that we do have a range of interventions that can be offered. We also have made the emphasis with this guideline that erectile dysfunction can be associated with various lifestyle factors, and the emphasis is given to patients to recognize that they can play a role in their best care for this kind of condition. And then furthermore, I think with this trial, one of the big new outcomes of it, I think, is this model we call shared decision-making, which is to recognize that we recognize the role of the patient, who may have values, preferences with regard to how they view their sexual function, and they should be an active participant to help us decide within the range of their medical conditions, while also being advised appropriately by the practitioner about limitations of certain conditions or even contraindications of various treatments, but find what might be most appropriate and effective as a therapy for the patient.
Tell me a little bit more about shared decision-making and how it impacted the development of this guideline.
Well, shared decision-making, I think, is a concept that I think is growing in medical practice broadly and certainly in urology, where we do recognize that there are a variety of treatments out there. There's a variety of approaches for management, that patients can be active participants in their best care. And with that, that evolution of this concept then has been brought to this topic area as well, and we think is very appropriate, particularly for erectile dysfunction, which to some extent is a symptomatic presentation, even though it is associated with clinical conditions, and to some extent it doesn't have to be managed. It's not like it's a requirement in terms of a true health risk as seriously as a cancer or a major cardiovascular condition in and of itself, but nonetheless it can be important. And we recognize the patient having a major role in how we go about managing it.
Some advice for the patient as far as what to ask your doctor if you're interested in making sure shared decision making is a part of your correspondence with the doctor. What kind of tips would you give to patients?
Well, the tips I think I have with patients is to certainly be very much proactive here. I value patients who are involved in their own care. To me, that's something I'd really admire and appreciate about patients. Certainly ask questions. Try to find out what is your preferences for management, understanding really what are the advantages and disadvantages of different treatments and their expected outcomes. Certainly be inquisitive and then be actively involved.
Is there anything specifically you might recommend that a patient ask their doctor if they're experiencing the symptoms of ED in regards to this new guideline?
Well, I think one of the considerations might be just to understand in basic terms what is the extent to which there are health conditions that the patient may have that are related to the erectile dysfunction. I think we certainly have evolved in the field now to recognize that erectile dysfunction is not as mysterious as it used to be. Mm-hmm. We certainly want patients to understand that it is not something that they just have to assume is a consequence of aging or represents some sort of other emotional or mental disturbance at all. Certainly we do recognize that it can impact on a man's and his couple and a couple. It's a man and his partner, the couple's sense of well-being and their emotional state and so forth. But we recognize that there are some real conditions that are related to the erectile dysfunction. And not to be ashamed or embarrassed about the problem, know that we can address it in a very forthright and positive way, that we can take action, that there are steps that the patient can also take. As I mentioned briefly a moment ago, lifestyle factors can be relevant here. So we do recognize diet, activity level, cigarette smoking, perhaps other kinds of exposures could be factors in that mm-hmm. person's presentation. And perhaps trying to optimize your health and taking an active role from the patient side, I think is something that certainly is a significant component of the basic management here.
As part of these new guidelines, I noticed the guideline panel also strongly advocated, whenever possible and clinically appropriate, that a man's partner be invited to participate in this process, part of this shared decision-making process. What's the significance of that?
Well, I think what we recognize that the partner is integral in management as well, to the extent that sexual activity many times is a couple's activity, mm-hmm. and the impact of the problem and the extent to which management can be undertaken may involve more than just the patient, but it could involve both patient and partner to achieve the best outcome possible. And so we certainly want to help convey that message, help a patient to understand that it is acceptable to get the partner involved and that together as a couple, perhaps we can achieve the most success for them.
I'm just going to ask if you have any final thoughts before we end this interview.
Well, I think my final thoughts simply are to echo a bit of what I've already mentioned, that, that again, we recognize that this is a common condition, that there are risk factors involved, that this is a condition that involves partnership between the patient and partner and the clinical practitioner, and that we can achieve successful outcomes with all involved.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Urology Care Foundation, the official foundation of the American Urological Association. For more information on today's topic and for all things urology health, visit urologyhealth.org.